Good afternoon. We're going to open up the Joint Ways, the Joint Committee on Ways and Means of Government, General Government. Today is February 27, 2017. And today we will be holding a public hearing on Senate Bill I-501, Advocacy Commission Office. Ms. Lucy Baker. Is she here? Oh, okay. Hi, well, Lucy.
Well, she's come up to the podium, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Senate Bill 5501 is the budget bill for the Oregon Advocacy Commission's office. You have been hearing predominantly other funded agencies presenting up until this point. This agency is funded predominantly from general fund, which is a change. And so funding levels for this agency should generally be evaluated in the overall context of the budget framework presented by the co-chairs. And we have Lucy Baker, the administrator, here presenting today, and she will also be presenting in conjunction with members of the various commissions.
Okay. We also got Robert. It's available, too. Okay. Well, I guess it's time to rock and roll.
Chair Manning and Chair Smith, thank you very much for having us here today. For the record, I'm Lucy Baker, and I'm the administrator for the Oregon Advocacy Commissions. It looks like our presentation is up for us to see, and you have it in your packets as well. I would like to invite, with your permission, two of the Advocacy Commission chairs and vice chairs that we have with us here today. And you'll see all four of them, but they'll begin with me. That is Dr. Barbara Spencer, the chair of the OCFW, and Robin Morris-Collin, the vice chair of Black Affairs.
Before we get started, let me say, as far as full disclosure, I have worked with the Advocacy Commission for two terms, and I am very familiar with the work that you do and the service that you've done for the state and communities, and I do appreciate you being here today and providing your testimony and this oversight, so thank you.
For those of you who can't see me, I am still here, but we'll keep this rolling, and I just have a few slides to go through. Sorry, how do I progress this thing? Is good.
Keyboard?
You know, I think I've found the sweet spot for the mouse, so let's hope that's good. The mission of the Oregon Advocacy Commission's office, of which I am the administrator, we support the work of the commissions on Asian and Pacific Islander affairs, also called OCAPIA, the Commission on Black Affairs, called OCBA, Hispanic Affairs, called OCHA, and the Commission for Women. And their goals, and ours, of course, are working together for the success of Oregon's communities of color, women, and children across the state. Historically, Governor Hatfield began what is now the Commission for Women in 1964 when he began the Commission on the Status of Women. And then Governor Vicatia moved ahead with that model and made them into what is now the modern OCFW. And he also established, during that time, the Commission on Black Affairs and the Commission on Hispanic Affairs. Then Governor Kitzhaber, working with Senator Lim, established the Oregon Commission on Asian Affairs. And in 2011, working with the community and the commission, they asked that it become known as the Commission on Asian and Pacific Islander Affairs, so also called OCAPIA, if I didn't say that. The commissions themselves, statutorily, and you'll be hearing about their statutory work, but they provide an essential infrastructure that brings the voices of often underrepresented Oregonians to the policy table in positive ways. Some examples this biennium are their participation on the Notario Fraud Task Force. Two of the commissions were on that. Convening immigrant recredentialing, which is professionals that bring their advanced degrees from other international universities here with them to Oregon, helping them become credentialed and work in the workforce. You'll hear more about that. Also, the Commission on Black Affairs has been working with BOLI to research and inform state contracting practices to improve the number of apprentices of color working in the trades. So the commissions leverage the volunteer hours of their members that bring highly specialized knowledge to over the four commissions. So we have 36 preeminent community members that are appointed by the governor onto the four commissions, each one having nine, and eight committed legislators who are appointed by the Speaker of the House and the President of the Senate. Together, the commissions provide over 20,000 hours of their type of expertise to the state over the course of a biennium. One of my final slides is about the communities that we serve. In 2017, the population of communities of color in Oregon has 12% Hispanic Oregonians, 4% API or Asian and Pacific Islander, 2% Black, and about 51% are women. I don't know what happened to the men, but it starts to get into the 51% women. And then the commissions themselves champion policy work that you're about to hear about across seven different areas. You can see them there. I won't read all of them. But education, of course, wage and equity, for jobs and health care are among the governor's priorities, which we share with the governors. But then there are also some new ones. And the newest one, I just mention it here, is environmental justice and equity, which is now a set of bills that the commissions track and provide testimony on. Did I do okay? Did I get it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Question? Great. Question, Representative?
And I'm sorry, Ms. Baker, I can't see you back there, but I know you're there.
I am here.
Your last slide referenced to growing communities, and you indicated that we've got about 18% of our population in those three different categories, and I'm wondering what our trends are. What kind of growth are we seeing there?
Hello. Representative Gomberg, the trends are that the fastest growing groups in Oregon are the Asian and Pacific Islander and Hispanic groups. And the Latino population in Oregon is a rural population as well as an urban population. So for those that are interested in demographic information, especially about your own district, if you would like that, I'd love to get it to you after the presentation.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So the commissions work together. They work independently and they work together for the success of Oregon communities. Our goals include building their legislative advocacy in the seven strategic areas, broadening the scope of research and the type of partnerships that the commissions have around their strategic issues, developing partnerships, and there are partners in this room and others well, you'll hear more about who their partners are. Growing Leadership with mentoring and internship for students to do public policy research, and integrating community engagement using interactive strategies. The commissions take their meetings out into the community, and then they also do surveys and other types of work that the commission chairs will talk about. There we go. And in your packets, or available through me perhaps, is our program piece in a brochure that shows the four statutory areas of the commissions across the bottom: advocacy, building leadership, building partnership, and doing public policy research. And there they are. I would like now to hand the presentation over to the chair of the Commission for Women, Dr. Barbara Spencer. You will have to reintroduce.
Mm-hmm. For the record, I'm Barbara Ramirez Spencer, chair of the Oregon Commission for Women. Advocacy is what really motivates most citizen representatives to join the Oregon Advocacy Commissions. As commissioners, we maintain an independent voice within the state government, collaborating with the governor and staff, legislators, and community partners on equity issues regarding policy that impacts those who have been unrepresented, left behind, or have no voice in this society. And for those communities, we look at the seven policy strategic areas that are listed on this slide. I'm going to review our advocacy performance in the last biennium, tying advocacy, policy, and legislation. My colleague, Robert Morris Collin, will really speak about advocacy efforts and engagement issues. On this slide, you can see that during 2015-2016, we supported 45 bills with testimony and support letters in the seven key strategic areas that have just been mentioned. In the chart on the left, you can see that we consistently exceed our projections in submitting bill testimony and are on target to do the same in the 2017-2018 biennium, with a projected submittal of 55 testimonies, an almost 20% increase from the previous biennium. On the pie chart, you can see the priorities in our supportive bills, with the top four being justice, safety, and policing, jobs and economy, health and health care, and education.
Barbara, for the record, my name is Robin Morris Collin. I am the vice chair of the Commission on Black Affairs. I'm also the Norma J. Paulus Professor of Law at Willamette. And Barbara and I are tag teaming a little bit, so you'll hear both of our voices. Okay. I wanted to add what.
Before you start your testimony, how long has there been a Norma Paulus chair at Willamette?
Chair Manning and Senator Johnson, there has been a Norma J. Paulus Professor of Law at the law school just since 2012, and I have held that position.
My father, who served in this body, had the great privilege of serving with Mrs. Paulus, and I have known her for pretty much my entire life. And what a pioneer for women, both in elected office and as an advocate for women's issues. And what a delight to meet the current occupant of the Norma Paulus chair. I did not know that chair existed. And that's the highlight in an otherwise kind of long and grinding day. So congratulations. You occupy a very important namesake chair.
Definitely, with many thanks and gratitude.
Yes. Cool. Well, that's happy news.
I did want to add, thank you so much. While we're on this slide, what you can see is that with the addition of a halftime policy analyst, Ty Schwefferman, who's sitting behind us, just the addition of a halftime policy analyst has allowed us to double our advocacy activities and exceed our own prior projections. So thank you.
Thank you. Next slide, please. Next, we want to point out a few legislative highlights and how we administratively handle the testimonies. What is important to point out is the consensus process that we use to choose an issue, to work on, and then to approve the written testimony. In this way, individual commissioners commit to the outcome. For HB 4128, two commissions took the lead for all of the OAC in researching, presenting the issues, writing the testimony, and speaking with the legislatures. For the next three proposed legislations listed, individual commissions were involved in these issues, came out in support, and then submitted testimony solely on behalf of their commission. And then finally, for HB 4036, testimony on behalf of the four commissions was submitted jointly and signed by all four chairs. So this is a process that we use with 36 commissioners and basically very sort of limited staff, and to make sure that we are looking at equity analysis and then providing sort of written sort of research and background, writing testimony, and then making sure that it is presented to the proper bodies. Thank you. Okay, in your materials, you have a handout entitled, if I can get my, this is our advocacy materials here. And here you'll see a lot more information on what we have advocated for in the past 2015-2016 period. You'll see the full detail of how we have defined our strategic policy areas and what bills were submitted, testimony from the OAC. I mean, that is the outcome of our efforts. But on this slide, you also see what steps were taken to provide that support. And as volunteers, it does take a process to put this together. Listed on the left-hand side of the slide is a legislative support the commissions provide, always capably guided by the OAC office. And here I want to sort of support what Commissioner Morris Collins has mentioned by having, we were able to do this with a part-time policy analyst, and you can only imagine what we might be able to do with a full-time policy analyst. This is very tough work for us. We're across the state. We're in different occupations, but it has to be tied together. And as you know better than I do, the timing of providing testimony, getting information together is of the essence. And so we have to respond very quickly, and it's the office staff that really provides that support for us. So we use the systematic process for selecting the priority areas. We've started out that way, tracking bills, providing testimony and letters, invited testimony, and then following up with the necessary support to help actually get a bill passed. Through the efforts of our policy analysts in this last year, we participated in two training sessions organized by the analysts and delivered by Senator Dembro, who serves as a legislative representative on the Commission for Asian and Pacific Islanders. He provided training in how to organize for the legislative session and sort of how to be effective in the interim. And now I'm going to pass it on to Robin.
Thank you. While we're on this side, I just want to call your attention to the variety of legislative kinds of advocacy work that we actually do. And we've been told, and we believe, that the viewpoints of women and communities of color that we represent contribute to legislative understanding of the broad key issues that are facing you, and also provide awareness of emerging issues for our communities, which span quite a range. So moving to the next slide, we also do other kinds of advocacy and engagement beyond our legislative activities, and with the help of our superlative staff, we are able to bring this viewpoint and awareness to other kinds of engagement, including something I'll talk a bit more about, the Oregon State Bar, The legislative task forces and commissions, we also serve on a variety of other task forces and commissions. I serve on the Environmental Justice Task Force. I know that Barbara has served on the, well, she's done radio interviews. Mm-hmm. We have also had members who've served on the Coffee Creek projects. We also in the Commission on Black Affairs have been very involved with the Oregon Youth Authority, and I know Senator Manning, Chair Manning, has been with us on and served on many of those other additional activities. These additional activities are supportive and facilitate our core interests in our core project areas. So looking at the advocacy... I beg your pardon.
Do you, as you're deciding what your agenda looks like, do you have a plenary session, or does the staff kind of run amongst and between individual members, and is it done by consensus or by majority rule? Let's say you take up some issue, and one of your 36 folks says not so much. Does that dump it out of the boat, or do you end up with minority reports? How do you decide what constitutes the agenda?
Chair Manning, Senator Johnson, we are supported in linking our efforts by the staff, but I'd like to defer, if I may, to our executive director, Lucy
sure.
Baker.
Senator Johnson, the commission chairs and vice chairs set the agenda, and they do it with their commissioners. We as staff put out a call for agenda items. So in that way, they set their own agenda, and then we follow it. And I know that Senator Manning, as chair of OCBA, and Robin Morris Collin as vice chair, along with the Commission for Women, can verify that that happens. What have the commissions ever had a minority report? Yes. There has been, in the 6 years that I have been administrator, there have been minority opinions on whether or not the commissions should even be supported financially, whether we should have as robust a budget as we do. And there were minority reports developed at that time. But that was 6 years ago, and I've got to say that executive appointments and the governor and the speaker and the House, or the president of the Senate, have given us commissioners that are deeply committed to policy. There are rare birds to find, but we have many. And since that time, we support voting for the commissions, and then also, most recently, we've begun consensus.
Let me interrupt you. Support voting? You mean that the Commission for on Black Affairs would advance an agenda item, and then the commission would vote, and they would say, so says one, so says us all, and that would go forward? Is that what you meant? Or?
That occasionally happens. More usually, the chair sets the agenda and asks other ideas to please come in, and it's very inclusive. I've never seen one turned down, unless it is to bump it to the next commission meeting out so that they can have a certain speaker on the subject. But voting is used most often for advocacy related bills that the commission wishes to take on, letters they wish to write, and other types of advocacy that they do, which is pretty powerful stuff. So the entire commission votes on it.
Okay. Thank you.
I don't know that we've ever had a no, but maybe we have. The chairs open it to yes or no. Mm-hmm.
Co-chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-chair. So let me ask a more direct question. Within any one population, you're going to have diversity of opinion. For example, I have a daughter that's a daughter-in-law, we call her daughter, that's from Peru. My son served a mission in Brazil, and the cultures couldn't be any different. With the Mexican and a Puerto Rican. And you think about all that, and while they're all lumped in as Latino, their differences couldn't be any more than someone from the South or New York and Oregon. How do you handle those differences of culture and opinion within each group?
It looks like those here may have a response, and then also one of our presenters, Chair Smith, is Linda Castillo, who is the vice chair of OCHA. And you're right, the Hispanic and Latino culture and indigenous culture is diverse.
Very diverse.
Diverse. So I would value her opinion on that as well.
Chair Smith, yeah. Chair Manning, if I might respond. I have found in my experience on the Commission on Black Affairs that we have a great diversity among our commissioners. For example, we also include recent immigrants from Africa on our commission. So what I have found refreshing and enriching about having a diversity within our own community is that we find issues of common ground and common interest, and we work from that point. Mm-hmm. There are, as you have referenced, differences, and they are important identity differences. Those we don't try, at least in my experience, we don't try to eliminate or brush under the rug. We find the common ground from which we can move forward.
And Mr. Co-Chair, I guess that was the answer I was looking for, is are we working on those issues where we can find a commonality?
Indeed we are.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And if I might just add, at least on the Women's Commission, we were very fortunate this year in having the report Counter In serve as a basis for looking at sort of 8 important issues for women in Oregon. And so it was a compilation of various research around the state. And so it gave us a foundation for all of us to sort of define that common ground and to find issues where each of us could sort of use our populations and sort of use this as a basis to move ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Continuing on, Chair Smith and Chair Manning, we specifically have looked at issues involving advocacy in other arenas, other forums, and one that I'm very proud of is our advocacy with the Oregon State Bar. You have in your materials and on the slide a very disturbing quotation made by a young county assistant district attorney, which shows the intentional invocation of racial and religious stereotypes by someone who holds a particularly powerful and often discretionary position. We felt that this was the time and the opportunity to use our considerable stature to actively engage with the prosecutors and with the district attorneys about the dangers of having that kind of stereotype involved in the making of professional and discretionary judgment calls. I'm very proud of our statement asking for ethical self-restraint and for protection of the principles of justice. As I say in this letter, justice itself is damaged by the perception of racism, impunity, and corruption. Chair Manning.
Thank you for that. I just want to add on, during the time that this incident occurred, I was the chair of OCBA, and I did go on the record doing interviews and stuff expressing our deepest concerns with regards to when you have a district attorney with the power to send people to jail, take their livelihoods away, it was definitely concerning. So I want to thank Vice Chair Collins for her words that she used. You know, she crafted the letter that we all agreed upon, sent, and then I went on and I did some other follow-up through news media and others because of this. We did get some feedback and we drew a lot of attention to that because it was concerning. You know, any time that you are on that type of office and you have the ability to take someone's livelihood and you look at it as if it's a joke, whether it was and later on it says that she said that it was a joke. Well, you just can't say that in that type of office. So it was definitely concerning, and I want to thank you very much for the work you put in and all of the commissions for supporting that effort.
Mr. Chair, how did this reconcile? was the...
We heard from the Oregon State Bar that they had decided to take no further action. That said, having been a member of the Oregon State Bar now for 23 years, I believe that these issues were raised in a very serious way, and that there will be an heightened attention to the way in which stereotypes might affect dispositions of a professional nature.
In addition, I believe that there was some limited disciplinary action that was administered to the assistant DA in the form of maybe a couple of days off without pay or something like that.
With respect, Chair Manning, I believe her own district attorney, the elected official for whom she serves, did remove her from the criminal docket, and she was reassigned to a I mean, it's a criminal docket, but she's not doing trials and litigation and dispositions of that nature.
So the efforts of the advocacy commissions were very effective in getting some type of movement, some type of resolution based on the concerns that we have.
Yes, sir. And I would like to add, in my prior life, I was also a prosecutor. So this is no idle concern for me. Yeah. Looking at our next slide on partnerships, each of the commissions has carefully selected community partners with whom we work. Our partners are policy-oriented, they are knowledgeable, they are well-organized, and they lend considerable stature and support to our key initiatives. So, for example, you see on the slide, the Commission on Black Affairs has had a productive relationship with the Urban League, which has really improved with the addition of our policy analyst, who also is able to shepherd young people in their legislative activities. Senator Johnson.
If I could make a comment, I did a tour of duty on the Urban League board. And it always struck me as a bit of a disconnect, and this was a while ago, so maybe this has been reconciled, that when the Urban League came out with their report on the status of Black Oregon, that it didn't seem particularly linked up with the advocacy organizations. And I hope that that's been corrected, but it seemed to me a lost opportunity to shine a very bright light on an important document that I don't think has in the past gotten the level of public acknowledgement of its existence. And maybe there are inroads being made there, and I would welcome hearing that.
Senator Johnson, Chair Manning, Senator Johnson, I very much agree and appreciate your comments. That report was an extraordinary effort, and the linkage that you observed missing in action, we are working to address now.
Good.
And that is another reason why it has been so critical and so helpful to have the additional support that we are asking for so that we can make those intentional and deliberate links work. You'll see other, beg your pardon.
Well, I was just going to say with the new leadership at the Urban League, I think that that will be an easier linkage to make. During my tenure there, it was several executive directors ago, and it was kind of a slog to get the gears to mesh.
We're in much better hands.
Cool.
Today.
Cool.
Also, if I might to defer to Barbara, the Commission for Women has also had very, very productive partnerships.
Yeah, we've worked with the Women's Foundation of Oregon. We were very much a part of their research project, served on their committees, edited materials, have been a part of now their community sort of partnerships and going out and providing discussion groups. So we're very much a part of them. And we've also worked with AAUW on their plans to sort of bring legislation.
And you'll see photographs in the next slide of our partners in action, starting at the top left.
Vice Chair Kennan, we have co-chair has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Mm-hmm. I represent a community that's comprised of just under 40% Latino. I'm going to assume 52 to 54% female in the African-American community. I'm not quite sure, but there's a population. Are we reaching out to folks in Eastern Oregon?
Co-Chair Smith and Co-Chair Manning, I believe the answer is yes, and you'll find that many of our activities that reach into rural areas, and particularly those in Eastern Oregon, fall in the bailiwick of the Latino population and the Commission on Hispanic Affairs.
Yeah, I'm going to be very, I want specifics. How are you reaching out to Eastern Oregon? I think what you're, the work you're doing, by the way, the reason I ask this question is the work you're doing is important.
Right.
And I want to know, how are folks in Eastern Oregon being informed?
Well, for one thing, we've done is really try to bring commissioners in from Eastern Oregon into our commission. And we now have someone from Hermiston who's sort of on the Women's Commission, a Latina, who's also a legislative individual. And she has a radio program, so she is out there speaking to her community, bringing the information from the Women's Foundation out to that population. When I was on the radio program with Representative Benz, we really spoke about these issues, you know, there, and I really spoke to him about how transportation, especially for Latinas, is really a women's issue. Tried to broaden some of that information. We constantly sort of tried to get more output and input. You know, it's in and out, and you're right. It really is difficult in the sense that we don't have as many people as we would like. But I think the more that we can sort of have commissioners and partners in those areas, the better we are.
So let me follow up. And again, I'm asking my question in the spirit of, I think the work you're doing is important, so please take it in that spirit. Do you have a KPM related to rural outreach? Does the Advocacy Commission have a KPM related to that, whether it's on the coast or Southern Oregon or Eastern Oregon?
Yeah, we don't. We have 21 KPMs having to do with how the staff serves the commissions and then what type of best business practices we're using. We've been working with executive appointments to make certain that the commissions have access to all manner of good commissioners that are in outlying areas. So we're just adding two new from Ashland and from Ontario. OCBA has a member from Enterprise. So we've touched on a few of those things. What the commissions are now able to do is to work with the commissioners that are in those areas to start helping the commission do its work in those areas. We don't have a big travel budget. We can't travel out to them. And oftentimes the commissioners themselves are participating either by Skype or by phone, but much more it's reaching into the communities.
Yeah, so Mr. Co-Chair, I acknowledge the budget's limited, but I also think the work is extraordinarily important, and I think with today's technology, there's no reason that commissioners couldn't be participating on radio interviews or contacting, in my case, I'll use my scenario, it's the paradigm I know, contacting the editorial board of the East Oregonian and do a phone interview to talk about the good work, just to heighten the awareness of what's going on. And so I would like to make a note to work with the co-chair just to talk, at least have a conversation on a KPM about reaching out to all of rural Oregon, whether it's on the coast, Southern Oregon, or Eastern Oregon. And I don't know what that would look like, but to me, I want to make sure that this is a statewide effort.
Co-Chair Smith, I personally embrace especially reaching out to rural women. And I know that the OCFW has made an intentional and deliberate effort to reach out to include the concerns of rural women in their extraordinary report, Count Her In. So speaking personally, and I'll defer to Barbara, of course, I would really urge you, in terms of specificity, to look at some of the work that our OCFW has done for rural women in Oregon. And I totally embrace your challenge to make this even more vigorous.
Senator Johnson.
Are you at liberty to tell me the name of your enterprise commissioner?
Yes, our commissioner is Gwendolyn Trice.
I was hoping you were going to say that. I was hoping. Senator Hansel has introduced me to her, and that woman's energy and engagement counts for two. So you got yourself a tiger.
Just to finish up my portion of this, and then I will give up my seat to the chair on the Oregon Commission for Asian and Pacific Islander Affairs, OCAPIA. I wanted to show you these photographs of our partnerships in action. Starting at the top, there's a rally showing Barbara Spencer and the Count Her In group, which included the American Association of University Women and the Women's Foundation of Oregon. Below that on the left, you'll see Ty Schwefferman and Casey Jama and I at the Urban League Legislative Day. Ty is the person that we've been so blessed to have in a part-time position. And then moving to the right, you will see our Commission on Hispanic Affairs, Alberto Moreno, the governor, and several other folks together with the Latino Health Coalition. And then above that is a group picture of OCAPIA and our chair, Mari Watanabe of OCAPIA, on their legislative activities with Apano. So with your permission, I will retire and be replaced by the chair.
Thank you, Vice Chair Collins.
I'd like to introduce Mari Watanabe, the chair of the Oregon Commission on API Affairs.
For the record, my name is Mari Watanabe, chair of the Oregon Commission on Asian Pacific Islander Affairs, and also work for the Portland Business Alliance and run a nonprofit called Partners in Diversity under the Alliance's umbrella. So, Chair Manning and Chair Smith and senators and representatives, through the growth of the Oregon advocacy staff, the commissions have also grown in their leadership work internally and externally. Internally, we have grown our public policy research projects and have taken on more advocacy work in the creation and supporting of bills important to our communities, as you have already heard. This work has also created a pipeline of highly skilled commissioners that join the commission based on the work that we are doing. And this last election, we have seen two advocacy commissioners become elected officials, including Representative Diego Hernandez, who served on the OCHA Commission, and of course, Chair Manning, who served on the Oregon Commission for Black Affairs. Externally, the commissions have increased their partnerships with community and government organizations to leverage common goals in research, policy research, and advocacy. Next slide. The advocacy commissions actively help recruit diverse candidates for the 310 boards and commissions that the governor has. We often have Mary Moeller, who is the director of executive appointments, sometimes reach out to us individually and ask for help in filling positions. APANO, which is the Asian Pacific Network of Oregon, has a leadership institute called the Asian and Pacific Islander Community Leadership Institute, also acronym is APICLI. And the OCAPIA commissioners have served as mentors and participants for this leadership institute over the years. Asian American Youth Leadership Conference, also known as ALAC. OCAPIA has funded scholarships yearly for high school Asian and Pacific Islander students to attend, and we have also served as facilitators during this conference. With Partners in Diversity, it's a nonprofit under the Portland Business Alliance umbrella, is currently partnering with OCAPIA on a research policy project on recredentialing, which I will be able to talk to you more about. And the last one, the White House Initiatives on Asian and Pacific Islander Affairs. This was under the Obama administration. OCAPIA commissioners were able to attend joint commission events in Washington, D.C. and Seattle to actually talk about the national state of Asian and Pacific Islanders.
And the OCFW has really been a big supporter of New Leadership Oregon, the program that's at Portland State University that provides leadership training over the summer to college-educated, to college women. And this past biennium, we provided 8 scholarships to women. And in this sense, we do reach out to Eastern Oregon, to other parts of the state, because it's not, even though it's based in Portland, it really reaches out to all colleges, community colleges, and four-year institutions throughout the state.
Mr. Chair, is New Leadership bipartisan?
Yes, it is. Absolutely is.
Good.
So other leadership activities that we participate in. I think you're going to have to go back a slide.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you. on the WIAPI, which is the White House Initiatives on Asian and Pacific Islander Affairs, we were able to bring representatives from the federal government to Portland and Eugene to participate in a community gathering to help our community meet these federal agencies and be able to develop relationships and learn more about what they do. For the OCBA and the Roosevelt High School Rough Riders Project, the commission participated in interviews with the distinguished members of our diverse communities, including Chair Manning. And this results in an opportunity for these high school students to do these interviews. They actually select who they want to interview and do the interviews, and then there's a big event to honor these people, and then they put these this information actually on banner stands that are taken around and used at different events. On the immigration fraud piece, so the Oregon Commission for Hispanic Affairs and OCAPIA were integral participants on the task force. You've heard about this already, but definitely this bill, the passage of this bill, protected unsuspecting immigrants who met and or people who posed as lawyers intending to deceive them. So this was a very important bill. And then this slide does speak to some of the great partnerships that the commission's work do, but there's one that's missing that I wanted to mention. The Department of Homeland Security has started quarterly roundtables, and they started these in April of 2016, with the purpose of building community and trust between the federal government and our communities. So our commissioners have participated in the 3 meetings that we've had since April.
Senator Johnson?
I know that I am commingling communities of interest and sovereign nations, but I couldn't help but reflect on the testimony that some of us heard on our recent Ways and Means road trip, advocating for a bill that would speak to the inclusion of Native American history. And I'm just wondering whether or not there is any collaboration between the commissions under your large tent and the sovereign tribes. My difficulty is that if we start writing a curriculum for specific interest groups, it seems to me that maybe some of your interests are left behind. I think of that moving ceremony on the Senate floor recognizing the Japanese internment. And it is somewhat concerning to me that you've got this bill, I think it's Senate Bill 3, if I recall correctly, that is proscribing a curriculum that maybe doesn't take into account your concerns about curricula offerings. Any comment? I know I've strayed a little bit, but just listening to you speak and reflecting on that ceremony in the Senate caused me to pose the question.
Currently, we have a Senate Bill 280 that we are looking at. It actually is from the Oregon Department of Education. So we would love to see all communities of color represented in our history books. I think we are working together collaboratively, not with the Native American group. I just found out about that as well when they actually testified, which was great. We had somebody from our community go and sit in the in the committee meeting to hear what they were saying, to see if we what they were doing and what we are doing, so we could hopefully at the end of the day be able to do joint work on this, because we think it's so important. But nothing right now. We haven't talked to them about this.
I would just, expressing my own opinion about this, I think that that collaboration would be highly beneficial rather than having one bill
absolutely
take off with one community of interest. I think it's that would be regrettable.
Yes.
I'm glad to hear the validation, to be honest with you. Thank you.
Just to kind of add to that, I know that Representative Diego Hernandez has put together a bill that stresses multicultural curriculum. So I'm not quite sure as what the span of is, and that might be another opportunity, as Senator Johnson says, to get with him, and certainly I can follow up with him. I haven't seen it yet. I know that he had worked on it. And instead of, like you said, doing individual bills and stuff like that, you know, to make it more inclusive, it's a great opportunity.
Well, I feel compelled to channel Co-Chair Devlin and to say that rewriting a whole bunch of curricula in a budget year where we may be having to remove people from the health plan, we're going to have to make some pretty difficult choices here. There may not be enough money to go around, and doing the one-off bills makes that even more problematic than a more global look at a multicultural curricula.
Yes, I agree. Did you want to talk
okay
to
yeah too? And then sort of finally on this slide is the OCFW meeting and community listening session that we held in Corvallis. We wanted to bring in, you know, the community and women and have them talk about their families and their work and their jobs and what life is like. So we brought in women from Linn and Benton counties, and we went to them. And we see this as a model. This is something that can be brought to Eastern Oregon, that sort of our commissioners can do. And this provided a good over 40 women came and sort of basically told us what they thought about what was happening in Oregon and what was happening to them.
Yes.
Senator. Did you capture that in any recorded way? Was there a transcriptionist or a tape recorder going, or?
You know, Senator Johnson, we do have minutes from that meeting, if you would like those.
Well, the reason that I ask is that we put so much emphasis, we writ large, on collecting the histories of deceased Oregonians or older Oregonians. And the Historical Society, the Oregon Historical Society, has a huge archive of legislators, and I'm just wondering to what degree they would embrace the notion of a contemporary archive that at some point would become historical, of course, but a contemporary archive. And if you're doing the outreach, for somebody to flip on a tape recorder and to capture those voices. I think it's great that there are minutes, but there's a certain authenticity to someone telling their story, and to have the opportunity to capture those and keep them as part of this tangible treasure of Oregon might be a collaboration that you would want to encourage.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I think we've also did that in the Counter-In report. There actually are tapes and sort of interviews with women throughout the state. So that's something that can be added, you know, and given to the Historical Society.
50 years from now, that record would be priceless. Mm-hmm. 50, 25.
Okay. And then I'm going to just to finish up and just speak about our Women of Achievement Awards. We're very fortunate in the OCFW. We honor women every year who have been remarkable women role models, you know, in this state. And we had four for the 2015 honorees, ranging from disability advocates, a creator of a monthly race talks. Gwendolyn Trice was one of our nominees, and sort of Kay Turan, president of the Volunteers of America. So these are remarkable women. They're nominated by someone out in their society, and then based on sort of what they've done, the commissioners then sort of look and then choose the honorees. And this year we're fortunate to have two honorees who are coming up in an event on March 8th here at the Capitol, Nancy Campbell Meade and Chapone's Silapisai Okamura. So we're looking forward to honoring those two women. So it's very, very fortunate. These are role models. These are very, very important women for this state.
And may I just add that Chapone Silapisai Okamura is a member. She is incoming chair for the Oregon Commission on Asian and Pacific Islander Affairs. So on policy research and analysis, you heard about the advocacy piece. So the other part that we are focused on is policy research. It's a huge area of growth for the commissions and one that we can be very proud of the work that we have accomplished for our communities. During this biennium, the commission worked on seven different research projects. And you can see in the pie chart that half the work is in jobs and the economy, followed by equal parts in justice, safety, and policing, education, and health. And the next slide, Senator Michael Dembro is the Senate representative on the Oregon Commission on Asian and Pacific Islander Affairs. And I would like to read his quote regarding the Advocacy Commission's policy research work. Quote, "What is so impressive about the Advocacy Commission's research work is the way that they combine solid academic research, community outreach, and practical policy proposals for community building change," unquote. So as I spoke earlier of the increase in the policy research, the work with community partners and government partners that the commissions have accomplished, this slide shows the data of how the Advocacy Commission's work has grown tremendously because of the growth of staff. In 2009 to 11, this was the first time the commissions actually did policy research work, and they did it in the area of transportation and education. And based upon this success, the 2011 to 13 biennium saw an increase to six projects. During the 2013 to 15 biennium, the commissions worked on four projects, which included the building of partnerships with community and government departments. For instance, the Commission on Black Affairs started their successful partnership with BOLI, the Bureau of Labor and Industries, on apprenticeship work, which continues today. During the current 15-17 biennium, there is a dramatic spike in all three bars because we were able to add Ty Schwafferman as a half-time policy analyst for the commissions. With Ty on staff, we were able to build more complex policy research projects. The number of projects is about seven, which is a big increase from the last biennium, and the gray bar of researchers has quadrupled in numbers. For the 2017 to 19 biennium, we see, again, tremendous projected growth, with Ty hopefully funded as a full-time position. Already, we have research projects waiting to partner with the commissions from the Criminal Justice Commission, BOLI Apprenticeship Office, and Mental Health Research for Black and Asian Pacific Islander Populations with the Oregon Health Authority and the Department of Human Services. I can personally attest to the tremendous increase in outcomes and communication during the legislative sessions with the addition of Ty.
Co-chair?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Co-chair.
Yes.
I sure hope I don't put my foot on my mouth on this one. Are legislators receiving copies of the policy research?
Yes, I believe so. And we also have a senator and a representative on our commission, so they're aware of this work as well.
But as position statements are being taken, each of us are getting a copy of it?
Not each. The Senate Education Committee has heard report outs from regarding disproportionate discipline. The Workforce Committee in the Senate and the OIB have our co-sponsors with the research. So it's the folk that actually develop the policy that are getting the report outs from the actual researchers. And then the commissioners who are legislators on the commissions also are champions of it and get it where it needs to go. But we can certainly send out the links. They're all on the commission websites, but they have been informing bills and being used by committees.
Yeah. Just as a follow-up, Mr. Chair, I would think there would be much greater credibility to the work being completed if that was distributed to all 90 members of the House and the Senate. And I would ask that we start doing that.
You are on.
Thank you.
Sir.
Okay, on the next slide, as chair of the commission on OCAPIA, I'm pleased to talk about the recredentialing project that we have partnered with Senator Michael Denbrough, the Commission on Black Affairs, and the Nonprofit Partners in Diversity, and the Oregon Workforce Investment Board. This research project was started because the Nonprofit Partners in Diversity and the Portland Business Alliance were doing research on how to move more people of color into living wage jobs. One piece of the research outcome showed that a high percentage of immigrants and refugees that came here have come with advanced degrees but are not working in their credentialed field. Most are working in minimum wage jobs that are not even in their field of expertise. So in other words, a medical doctor is not even working in any part of the medical field. So Senator Denbrough and OCAPIA saw this as an opportunity to build, find pathways for these highly skilled individuals to bring their experience and cultural competence to our workforce here in Oregon. This is also known as brain waste, as in the Obama administration and in other organizations across the country. So we are working with partners, including the governor's office and the communities of color. So we hope to see these talented immigrant and refugee professionals working in their credentialed field.
Senator?
Uh-huh. I'm not just pandering to you, Mr. Chair, but it isn't just the immigrant populations. We have way too many highly skilled veterans coming out of the military, and the civilian marketplace will not recognize their credentials. Mm-hmm. And the one that particularly resonates with me are pilots and A&P mechanics, airframe and power plant mechanics. And somebody who has demonstrated skills in aviation disciplines in a theater of war, perhaps in combat conditions, shouldn't have to reprove to the FAA that they know how to fly or crank on a helicopter. And I think it's an outrage that we leave them behind, too.
Yeah. Senator, I would love to talk to you about the research that I'm doing for my research proposal. There was some efforts done on the Obama administration that have coordinated with businesses and universities, such as the aviation giants that we have, Boeing, for those certifications, and they are getting their certifications as they come out, but there is more. We have also have a bill here that I would love to talk to you about that helps with those accreditations as well. It's a little different path than what the Obama administration has been doing with active duty, you know, plane pilots and mechanics and stuff, getting their certifications and stuff while they're there, and they just leave the service and they go into those jobs. But there's more that can be done. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Senator Manning and Representative Smith and subcommittee members. My name is Linda Castillo, and I'm the vice chair of the Oregon Commission on Hispanic Affairs. And I have the great pleasure to talk about some other policy research that we're doing through OCHA. And our focus this year has been looking at the mental health disparities in the Latino community, which have been pretty substantial. We're finding we're really not doing significant enough outreach to communities, particularly urban areas and especially in the rural areas. Oregon is very huge, and we have a huge Latino population, as Representative Smith mentioned, in the rural areas, and we're really not reaching them very well in terms of mental health services. So this study is really an opportunity for us to kind of just form better strategies, improved strategies, and to address some of the service gaps that we have in these areas, and also to make some policy recommendations in this regard as well for improved access and services. And some of the areas we're going to be looking at, of course, are data on language barriers, the variety of diagnoses in mental health for folks, the comparative rates of access, which are very variable for our community in urban and rural areas, and beginning to look at a literature review particular to trauma-informed models, which is pretty significant for our community, high rates of depression and post-traumatic stress disorder for a variety of reasons, and a use of a peer model mental health specialists as well in terms of mental health services. So we're going to be doing those particular pieces and really looking at an opportunity to partner with OCHA, of course, our commission, and the Oregon Health Authority, as well as the Department of Human Services and the Governor's Office. And so we have a lot of excitement about this. We're going to be working with Dr. Valerie Smith of DHS, and she's providing us a great deal of expertise in this particular area with this community. We're also going to be very excited to be bringing on some interns as well. So as you see in that spike that Mari presented earlier, we're going to have a significant number of interns that are going to be working with us. So that's very exciting. So you all had an opportunity to look at this very beautiful policy research item, and it really allows us to, you know, be more expansive in terms of the work that we're doing out in the community and the various public research policy areas. And for us, it's really about looking at the access pieces and the cultural competency, addressing the health disparities, and improving health outcomes for all our communities. Representative Lou Fredericks also was really very, very kind to share this this quote with us. The sound comprehensive studies now emerging from internship programs at the Office of Advocacy Commissions have increased the capacity, the efficiency, and the effectiveness of commissions themselves and their value to communities they represent and the state as a whole. And I'm very excited for the advent of these interns that are going to be coming on board. We're going to be having them do a variety of work. Someone's going to be working particularly on the qualitative piece of the work and looking at all the data sets that are available to us. And other folks are going to be looking at the qualitative pieces and doing the interviews with our community, not only locally, but rurally, in the variety of ways, face-to-face, phone, however we can do that to really get those bits of information of how folks are doing in the community.
Okay. So as we go forward, Representative Wisnett would like to provide testimony. So we're going to notify him. Once he get here, I'd like, out of a courtesy, I'd like for him to just come in. We put everything else on hold and let him do his testimony, and then we'll pick it back up. But in the meantime, please continue.
Okay. So I think I'll, the outcomes of the legislative investment, can I pass that on to you to share a little bit?
Thank you, Vice Chair Castillo. The number of policy research projects that the legislature has been able to benefit from through our connections and now through direct emails to the commissioners or to the legislators has increased dramatically. And the we've got 15 research master's, PhD, and 3L law students who are now researchers this biennium, and it's only going up. The addition of a part-time policy analyst will help drive these outcomes forward with the commission so that they have more and more of them. At this time, I think that if, unless Mari and Linda, you have more to add, I will get into some of the more boring slides that finish the presentation. And thank you very much for helping me with this.
Thank you.
So, Marcia Kelly, is she here?
I'm still presenting.
Okay, I thought that she was part of this. Okay, no. Okay.
She isn't. Okay. I'll finish up here and then. Robert Otero has more too. Well, we're switching over to this. I'd like to quickly go over the reduction options that we've put together. It shows that at 5% reduction, we would be able to reduce commissioner staff travel, reduce our data storage costs, reduce professional services, bump out several years the replacement schedule for our phones,
lower the number of types of meetings that we provide per diems for, and get one room where we all work together in order to reduce rent. For the next 5% reduction, we would reduce our policy analyst position to 0.4 FTE, reduce our cell phone plans, move our office into lower rent areas. Again, work with the commissions to choose those types of meetings that we provide per diems to, and reduce the leadership scholarships of the commissions. At the additional 5%, which makes a 15% reduction, we would reduce the policy analyst to 0.3 FTE, reduce data processing, take our website down to a much smaller size, and reduce our archiving, which is currently, for the most part, electronically stored, but we have a lot of it.
So, in essence, you'd just be out of business.
No, sir. We would be right here the next session. No, it would be difficult, but the commissions have been through difficult times, and we understand what choices are ahead of you there. Moving on is our current organizational chart. We have 2.5 staff. 4 commissions. We support about 70 individual commission meetings a biennium. This chart looks similar, but the change is that we are asking for an additional, the other half of our 0.5 FTE to make the lower right position full time. The key performance measures, I know that we've had a new idea put forward. We embrace whatever it is that has to do with our performance, both as a staff, and I know that the commissions would embrace new KPMs put forward by the legislature. We have 20 KPMs. The top flight being our customer service to the commissions themselves. How are we doing as their staff? We have a 93% rating, which is above our goal, but we always wish to improve, of course. And with the addition of the 0.5 FTE policy analyst, we've improved dramatically in timeliness. In the next flight of best practice indicators, we reach 100% on all of our best business practice indicators. The major budget drivers for this session for us, we are still working on a question that was asked to us by Joint Ways and Means in 2013 that had to do with asking the chairs and vice chairs what resources they need to more fully fulfill their statutory mission and duties. At the time, we had no staffing plan, and we had 2 staff. And the chairs went back and asked the commissions what it is they needed. And they developed our first, with the help of DAS-HR, our first staffing plan. Top priority is a policy analyst. And last session, the legislature has always been able to say yes to us in some regard, and the legislature invested in a part-time policy analyst, and we're hoping for the other half. Robert will tell you more, too. There is a truing up of the administrator's salary. He'll be able to explain that. The program and service changes for 2011 to 17, we've grown the need for assistance with bill equity analysis, testimony, public policy. Research has quadrupled with our staffing. We're a more stable staff. When I was 2 years old, I was the longest surviving administrator the commission's had. I'm now 6 years old and still here. The commissions are still growing. We now have a backlog of research topics. We have an emerging OAC committee structure in the area of joint health, and soon starting a joint education committee. And we have a growing need to communicate with constituents statewide, as Representative Smith has noted. Our policy option packages are two, and I've mentioned them both. Any major changes? Yes, the population of our communities is growing. The number of communities of color in rural areas is now far more widespread. In 2013 to 15, we were able to increase legislative advocacy, as you've heard, and building our state partnerships has increased dramatically. And in the current biennium, with the addition of the 0.5 FTE, we've had additional support, and we've exceeded our projections. The chairs have talked about that. Cost containment, we've been leveraging state partner equity data. They own the data that we use for public policy research, but with our help and focus on equity, we're able to get much more leverage out of state partner equity data. We've been building the policy-related data with a new state library reference section work that we're doing on a policy playbook, and growing our community meetings statewide, as Representative Smith is interested in, I know. And I would like to turn this meeting over to Robert Otero, the CFO budget analyst, for his presentation.
Thank you.
Okay, Chair Manning, Chair Smith, and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Robert Otero with the DAS Chief Financial Office, and I'm the analyst for the agency. The presentation you're about to see is a standard presentation from our office to orient the committee with the governor's budget highlights and adjustments. The agency's emerging issues, I think the agency went over it pretty well. Increased workload and increased equity lens and legislation as well. The governor's budget invests in resources to support equity development and research for the agency. In this chart is the expenditure history of the agency. As you can see, there's some growth in the agency, and that is mainly due to the addition of the operations and policy analysts, and the governor's budget continues that investment made in the 2015 session. In this slide is the expenses by category, and as you could see, the main budget is for personal services for the agency, and that really represents the three positions in the agency.
Okay. Do you have much longer? I want to get the representative up here as well.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Chair Manning, I have two more slides, so I can run through it real
okay.
quick or finish.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. In this slide is investments for the governor's budget. The position trues up. It updates the administrator position to reflect the current responsibilities. It also increases the policy and operations analyst to full-time, and there was some standard statewide adjustments to the DAS price list and state government service charges, which actually reduced some expenses for the agency. And with that, that concludes my presentation. Are there any other questions?
Oh, Robert, thank you so much. I know that each time you get up here, it seems like I'm pushing you out of there, aren't I? And you only have, like, what, four slides? Representative, please come forward. Thank you.
Good evening. Good afternoon, I guess. Good afternoon, co-chairs Manning and Smith and honorable committee members. I'm Gene Wisnett, for the record, State Representative, House District 53. I served on the Commission on Asian and Pacific Islander Affairs for two terms and worked with the director on the budget. I'm testifying today for your support of the Oregon Advocacy Budget and their Policy Option Package 101. During my service on the Advocacy Commission, I witnessed how the Oregon Advocacy Commission budget was reduced to a totally unacceptable level, and how the executive director tightened her expenses beyond belief. She gave up their office phone line, their copy machine. It was pretty bad because honorable members, we have to have an Advocacy Commission. If we're going to have an Advocacy Commission, we need to have money to do their job. So more recently, their budget has grown a little, but I still believe their work deserves a full person to help perform their mission, and thus I urge the committee to pass this budget, including the request for additional 0.5 FTE to give them the operations and policy analysis position they need. Mr. Chair, thank you, and Ms. Co-Chair.
Representative, thank you so much. Any questions for the representative? I have to say that I agree wholeheartedly with you. I was there with you during the tenure, and I know that they are now already at the position where they're sawing off limbs in order to survive, and you know they're doing great work. So thank you so much for your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Manning. Thank you.
I think we had one other person, Marcia Kelly.
Chair Manning and Chair Smith and members of the committee, I'm Marcia Kelly. I'm the public policy advocate for the Oregon Women's Rights Coalition, and I'm here to support the Advocacy Commission's budget in full. I've been around the Advocacy Commissions for longer than I would like to admit, and I know that they have gone through difficult times, but they have come through, and the fruit of going through those difficult times is the trees are producing. One of the things, if you take away the tools that a gardener can use to prune the trees, the fruit doesn't produce as well. And so I am here in support of all of the advocacy commissions. To make a note, the Women's Commission and their Women of Achievement have over the years honored women of all cultures in Oregon and races, and those cross plantings of activities also inform the work of the commission, most especially the question directed to the Native Americans. There have been two Native American tribe women who have been honored by the Commission for Women. One was Catherine Harrison of the Ground Round. Many people know her.
Thank you. Are there questions? Thank you, Ms. Kelly. We have Representative Lou Fredericks. Senator Lou Fredericks. I'm sorry.
Senator, you should know. You're representative
to me. Senator, please.
Thank you. I'm Senator Lou Frederick from District 22, North and Northeast Portland. You know, and it's really very clear that I don't think I can say enough about the change that has taken place regarding the advocacy commissions and the people who are part of that commission, and the research that we've seen that has supported some of the changes that are going to take place, I think, throughout the state. It's really quite amazing. We have, for instance, some issues, significant issues regarding disparate discipline in schools for minority students. We know that. People have been talking about that literally for 40 years that I know of. But we haven't had the kind of detail and presentation because of the advocacy commissions that we've been able to bring forward and say this is something we need to do something about. We've also had the ability to have people look at various issues within the various ethnic communities and the Women's Commission and come back with ideas that all of them can agree to get something accomplished, something done. That's a key element. And I have been very pleased to be part of the OCBA. I'm not sure what my status is right now, quite frankly, because I've moved over from the House to the Senate, although the chair's not so sure of that sometimes, I think. But the fact is, we have a gem here. We have the ability to get things done for marginalized folks in the state of Oregon in a way that's effective. And that includes research. It includes people talking together. And it means that we can, I think, make things better for the people who are in the state of Oregon. And that's our job, in my view. Using whatever resources we possibly can. That's what they're doing. I'm pleased to say that I've gotten a chance to work with several of the folks the OAC, because they have actually done good work. So it's a simple message, but I wanted to make sure that you got it at least several times.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
Questions?
No questions. I think we have like 1 minute left. If there's anyone else that can do 1 minute, if not, co-chair, we're all good.
We're all good.
So with that being said, I think that we are going to adjourn from this meeting, close this out, public hearing out, and we will resume tomorrow and reconvene at 1500 hours. That's 3 o'clock for civilians here at same place. And we are adjourned.
Good job, Mr.
We are adjourned.
Good job, Mr.